Saturday night at midnight on CFUBFM 101.9. Where does modernism stop and postmodernism begin? Does an alternative cinema really exist? Does video signal the death of celluloid? Is film truth running at 24 frames per second? Shock horror cinema doesn't really care. Obscure and rarely screened genres such as industrial shorts, cinema verite, gore, and exploitation films are now featured on the big screen every second Thursday at the 5050 Arts Collective, 416 Craigflower Road, next door to the Spiral Cafe. For program info, call 383-5144, extension 1882.
So you're listening to Sad and Beautiful World. This is CFUV 101.9 FM, 104.3 on cable, and cfuv.uvic.ca is the place to reach us on the internet.
We are.
So welcome back, and you were just hearing from Lawrence.
Oh, Lawrence, Yitzhak, Braithwaite.
And
that was CBGB, which is James McLean. He's from Montreal, and that's from a release he has called Wall Street. And the first one was called Stop Wall Street Mix, and the second one was his Dubcess Tribunal, where there was a little spoken word over the top.
So you're going to be reading at Dark Horse Books.
Yeah, Dark Horse.
On
the
22nd.
The 22nd. Yeah, at Dark Horse Books on the 22nd, Thursday, 8 p.m. Yeah, a little Dark Horse.
So that's on Johnson Street.
Johnson Street. Yeah.
So yeah, Lawrence is going to be. Is this like new writing that you're going
to
be?
You don't know what to expect, right? You think I'm going to be some crazy person on.
Yeah, so see, is it?
They got security guards.
It makes people nervous.
I know.
I can see.
Okay, so.
See, I'm like shaking here.
No, here you go. Yeah, now I'll be a Dark Horse. Now you have the info. So.
Now I have the info.
So.
So it's at 7:30, and it's on a Thursday. That's the 22nd of May, 2003. And it starts at 8, as everyone knows.
It's going to be next
year. In Victoria, everything starts
at 8. Yeah, it's going to be next year. Yeah.
And Johnson Street, and it's 623. And if you want a phone, it's 386-8736. And yeah, Dark Horse is a good place to go and buy books as well if you're interested. So do they have a copy of any of your books there? They have Wigger or Rat Tonight?
Well, Wigger's is kind of sold out in a bootleg sort of way.
So is that out of print now?
Yeah, well, it's supposed to be out of print, but it keeps popping up in bookstores in various countries, and nobody knows why. But that's about it. Anyways, he sold the last Wigger, and I'm sorry, we're in Victoria. No, there's plenty of Wiggers to go around, but he sold the last copy of the book Wigger, and he doesn't have the second one, which is Rats Are Nice. He doesn't have a copy of that. So there'll be no books for sale. This isn't a. It's just me after 3 years, not reading in this city, just finally being able to read in this city, and I much appreciate Dark Horse for allowing me to do that.
So has this been your own decision not to read?
Not really. No. It's not been my decision actually. I'm just not very welcomed in the reading circles here.
Okay. So we will maybe not delve into that too much right now?
Oh, the ignorance, bigotry, and elitism of the literary circle in this town? Oh, no, let's not.
Okay. We won't mention the Wells Books incident that I seem to remember.
Oh, let's not forget the Wells Books incident, shall we? Yes, don't ever be a black man and walk in there with, like, brand new books. The Wells sisters just call the police thinking you must have stole them.
Right. And they don't buy books that smell of tobacco either, apparently.
Oh, did you try and sell tobacco-flavored books?
A friend of mine did, yeah.
Oh, dear. And this is not Wells Books. No,
they sniffed them and then...
Russell's books, they were always sweet. They were always really nice. You know, and they're from a very old, distinguished, you know, book-selling family from Montreal. This is just the second store. The first store is in Montreal. That's where Mordecai Richler and Leonard Cohen ever go hang out, and they purchase a lot of their books there. It's a very huge place. The big thing in Montreal for Russell's books in Montreal is the Sunday shopping. Because it's so huge, people just decide to go have coffee, and then they'll go down to the old Montreal, and they go to Russell's Books, and they just browse all day long. And then there's a special little secret section full of really antiquarian special books, which only Mordecai and the gang, God rest his soul, were allowed to go in there. And you know, the special select few. And
fetishists.
That's why it was kept, because they didn't want collectors. Mm-hmm. And I think people in comic books and records, music will tell you that. There's a difference between a collector and people who just love the music or literature or art, you know, comics. And a lot of comic book stores and bookstores who follow that sort of thing. A lot of comic book stores still follow that. Not too many bookstores are like that. I just know Russell Books in Montreal is very much like that, where they want, they'd rather sell a book. Some people would rather sell vinyl or CDs that are really limited and hard to get. Mostly it comes in vinyl now, right? And comic books, to people who are going to love them, appreciate them, rather than sell it to somebody just for the cash. They have their little thing for the cash, you know, people that collect. But they want this red. You know, like I had a 45 of the original, was it, Hiptone of REM's Radio Free Europe, right? And I had it, and it cost me about $1.50 when it just came out. And I ordered it from Athens, GA. And that thing went for a lot of money. But I just didn't want to just sell it, even though I was hungry. I just didn't want to shove it to anybody. And then Jamie of Ditch Records, before he owned Ditch Records, he worked at Lyle's Record Store. He actually knew who REM were from those days, and he appreciated them, and he knew who Pylon was. And I wanted to give it to him, and he just said, no, I can't. So he did offer me some money for it, but I knew that when he had it, that it was being played by somebody who cared, who understood the whole Athens GA scene. And it was so that's what I'm saying, and people do things like that. And Russell Books was like that in Montreal, and still is. And in a way, the Russells here, the second store that they have, the family have another store here, they do the same thing. And I just know the comic book stores, you know, Curious to Yellow, to they do things like that as well. Like they have, there's certain things that, you know, I think you'd really appreciate this. You've been really looking for this one. You know, they'd rather see the comic and the record listened to by somebody who loves it, rather than collected, wrapped up, put on a shelf, and then resold in an auction someplace, you know.
Right, yeah. I mean, I guess there's been a few bookstores that have kind of gone under in Victoria over the recent years. I'm just thinking of the one that was in Market Square.
Oh, the Haunted.
Yeah, the guy Howard who ran that.
Howard, yeah. And, Sweet man.
And then there was Chapters as well, which couldn't have done the small bookstore as much help.
Weird enough, though, Chapters has been the nicest to me.
Really?
Yeah.
That's the paradox.
That's the weird part. They've actually been the nicest to me. When Rose comes second, actually. Russell's, you can't really say that because they don't sell new books, right? But the nicest people have been Chapters. When my books come out, they always put it right up there. I mean, they really do try and support the Canadian writers. I mean, at least when I was there, it was local, and they were just always putting it out there, and they didn't really care. Not just because, you know, people tend to buy space. Well, they'll still put out people who can't afford to buy, or the companies didn't spend money to buy a spot, and they'll put it in a major place to show it off that it's local. So that's what Chapters does do. And they did allow me to read there. You know, so that was nice. However, Bolin Books, I was so hungry one day, I went to go see if I could sell a couple of little used copies of Wigger, right? And they couldn't buy it. And this is with the Bolin. That's actually the woman who... Bolin herself, right? I'm sorry, I can't remember her name. But she was really nice, and she knew I was a writer. She couldn't buy the books, because that's not how they do it. They go through all the distributors and everything. But I just had my little puppy with me, and the reason why I got up that early was to go down to try and sell, because I ran out of dog food. And what does she do? She says, 1 minute, and I thought that she was going to go in and try and buy these books off me. Instead, she comes back with a bag of dog food. That was sweet.
Yeah.
And she did it in a way that didn't make me feel like I was humiliated. Wow. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, I've always got a good vibe off that bookstore. But although I never buy anything in there. Because books are so expensive.
Yeah, I know. Rats are nice. It's like supposed to be this class issue and everything. And my friend, Andrew, he said, you know, it's really nice you wrote this book, you know, about class struggle and everything. What the hell is wrong with your publishers? Nobody from the class of people that you wrote it for can afford it. $17 Canadian, Lauren, and come on. Yeah. And I was like looking at this, 17, are you out of your mind? But yet that's what they sold it for. It did sell. But unfortunately, so when I got my copies, and you get your little complimentary copies, I just handed it to people on the street. And they're like, here, while you're sitting there, here's something to read. You know, and...
But what's the writer's cut of that? How does it break down?
You don't. Most writers get ripped off. They get ripped off a lot, especially small presses or medium presses, which I moved up to fake medium press, actually a large press, but and that was the second one. And unless you're selling, you know, unless it's something that you, there's no way they can deny, because you know the sales are just way too high, then they still manage to cut. So let's say if you are Stephen King, even though he's got massive lawyers, but for his earlier books, if he sold 2 million copies, let's say he got $1 a book, right? He should get $2 million or something like that, right? But actually, if he does get $2 million, he probably actually did sell 5 to 7 million. And then the books are all covered. So if you're this little person, like how much does it take? 5,000 copies for a bestseller in Canada? Well, if you do that, well then, you know, it's so easy to totally bamboozle you by shuffling the books. Because what some publishers do is, even though they're not allowed to do it, and it's not in the contract, still try and recover their printing costs. So therefore, they still keep cutting it until their total printing costs are covered. Then they start dishing out your royalty. But they keep, you know, fiddling with the books.
So are you going to be reading some more?
I've given up reading, actually. I'm going to become a monk. And
this is not a good time to announce this.
No,
I've got nothing else to play in the
CD.
You've
got nothing else to play? Well, I got stuff to play. You want to play some music or something like that? We can come back and do something else. Do you want to do something like that? We can play Yo Yo Yo.
Do you have any of that Bliss 8?
You want to hear Bliss? This is great. This is some little guy. He's from San Francisco, and he does independent films. He's got a little website. And he does independent films, and then he decided to screw all that little hip-hop bragging crap, and he was just going to speak from his heart with his friend, who's a DJ named Exacto, and they just put out these little MP3s and everything, just like the other kid that I just played, and I did a little thing over it. That was James McLean, and he's just a kid out of Montreal, and this is this whole movement that where kids are just working at home or just working with friends that are not being part of the industry or running with a crew or representing anything. They're just trying to like just make music, even if it comes to hip-hop, and that's really dangerous in hip-hop because there's bullies there, but these kids are just doing it anyways because they just love the music, and it's about speaking and expressing yourself, so they're going to do it one way or the other without working within in the whole media of the hip-hop. And if you don't want to call them MCs, don't call them MCs. But this is 8-Point Bliss. Do you want to hear it? Because I could slammer on now. This one's called Lifestyle Bout. He's from San Francisco. We can get it on. Oh, it's playing. Nah. Oh, maybe we're not. We'll try this again.
Okay, try again.
Here we go. Yeah, 8-Point Bliss, Lifestyle Bout.
Mind open, like the ocean, consuming, making sure that you're moving. Cause everything is about movement, the way that your mind widens, the way that your life excites, the way that everything enlightens, the way that all this shit moves around in circles. It's like it has a purpose, it needs to serve it. Don't get nervous, it's just the way it works, yeah.
Yo, I understand what you mean, kid, because I was thinking about what happens when I take a breath, and you see, when I get one is given to me. We are in this constant cycle with all that we. All of life is our brother, so how can we even take now to be kind to every other person that we meet? Because they're even closer than the tree. Although the tree supports us, they have what we need.
Yeah. See, everything's about balance. So how the hell could you even think about malice? Because every word you say comes back to you like threefold, fourfold, sometimes even tenfold. It's like a big avalanche of bad karma. And you really don't want to deal with that shit. It's like gonna harm you real bad, and you don't want to have to deal with that. So just sit back and relax, please.
So everything you do, think about how you treat that, how they're going to treat you. So why don't you do what you think you need to?
It's a bad thing.
Little 8-point bliss there, and feedback. A lot of feedback. And dead air.
I'm deaf and blind.
Well, maybe it's not dead out there, no, but it's dead on my headphones, but it's coming back in, and we're on. Hey. We're just playing a new Perfuse track right now.
Ooh.
All right. Oh, we're out again. All right. Oh. Just keep going. Okay, we're going to keep talking here. All right? Keep talking. Are we still on?
Maybe
you guys can hear it. So tell you what.
I can hear you through my headphones.
You can hear, but we can't hear ourselves.
So we've got three sets of headphones here. And
yeah, that can be a total drag.
Two of them might work. Two of them...
I'm curious to pick mine up in case I get that feedback again.
Oh, I don't mind feedback. I grew up with Sonic Youth, so... I didn't grow up with them in the same neighborhood. I meant listening to them. Let's not start any rumors here.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Oh, no. I'm off again. But we can stop playing with that for a little while.
Where is all this feedback
coming from? What was that?
I'm just wondering where all this feedback is coming from.
I don't mind its feedback, if that's what you're worried about. Because I don't think they can hear the feedback, but if you can... No. Yeah. Oh, maybe... Is it the dog?
No,
it was the dog. No.
No, it wasn't. But look,
it's not the dog.
But
this is really getting. Now I can sort of hear myself. Please stop playing. Oh, here we go. Well, I can't hear myself, but that's good. So, you got any questions? I can hear myself now. Go ahead. Got any questions?
Any questions? Have you ever applied for a Canada Council grant?
Yeah. Well, so much for that one.
You didn't get one?
Oh, I think I got a travel grant.
To go to Toronto or New York?
Oh. I got a travel grant. Hey! Oh, so I'm back on again. So we're going to keep working off of Monday Magazine 1996 or something like that. These questions are so dated.
They're so dated. Well,
what
do you expect if you haven't read for 3 years?
No, I haven't read for 3 years.
Hiding out in your bunker in Fernwood.
There was a book out in 2000, you know what I mean? That was The Rats Are Nice, which, like, this is the only reason why that this may sound weird is because he keeps the headphones keep going out. I think they're like voice activated in the opposite, like when you talk. But
I can hear you, and everyone else listening to the show can hear you.
Well, that's good. Yeah, but it's just kind of like odd for me.
Okay.
But
I'll twiddle this knob again.
Well, he's gonna twiddle his knob for you. He's gonna twiddle his
knob.
Good
job you can't see.
Yeah, so maybe we could move on from okay, you know what else I did? I did Lollapalooza, but that's old.
You're only as good as your latest.
Oh, okay. 9/11. They flew me out to New York as part of, like, they assembled a lot of writers who they thought were the best in alternative writing. So I was there with Dennis Cooper, Kevin Killian, Michelle T, Elaine Miles, and I read with Dennis Cooper. And so that was interesting, especially since, you know, people had to take trains to come from Manhattan. To come down, because they held it in Buffalo, to come down to hear me read. And people actually did that. I thought that was really, I didn't even realize I had that kind of a fan base, but I did. So that was nice. Yeah. So, yeah.
There's more feedback.
Try and get a podium in Victoria. Good luck.
There's always the James Bay Inn.
There's always the James Bay Inn, but I'm sure they wouldn't want me to read there, too. Hey, here's something for you. I wrote this for Bush. It's called Ivan IV in a rage slammed his son in the head and killed him. Okay, metaphor, more than madness. What was that meant for? Not the metaphor, this is the real thing, the island of regained king. Now comes the time for us to raid the continent. Entangled in the weaving of dreams, I see him illa, similar to Yoruba. Love the critter for his tightest cipher. Allah comes and I simulate the simile, peace and violence of poetry. Irony, come to increase the game. I am drunk and you're insane. Where's my roomie? 'Tis the sixth son when I mention equality, signifying monkey men bop them with monkey's bosun's fist. Can I get a visionist? This is the emotion of the angered nation. Come get with and be my witness. Ivan the Fourth in a rage slammed his son. Ivan slammed him. I slammed his head. We caught dropping jib or jeb. For I slammed his son and won the head. He killed him. Slam killed him. The father, the son, nativity killed. I slammed his head. Smashed the wall against the wall. I want to slam him. In a rage. I and I. In a rage slam. Sons of Jesse. I am somebody. I slam somebody. One respects to Jesse. Shiite, Sunni, Garvey, Sephardi, Mizrahi. This is all a piece of me. 4, 1 plus 5 plus 1 plus 7, all good eye slammers go to heaven. Never I simulate God the Son. Fucking with the fact that the change gonna come. Check the sounds, peep the vibes, vocal brato basso, Mr. Bassy, free fire monkey sounds through sound system, checkpoint Charlie, converting to heterosexuality, hypnotizing you with Horace Andy. AMG 114, Allah's in the man who's seen hell of fire, build a funeral pyre, pour a lickle out for my crimey. Avoid the invasions of the anti-sun army, encryption, risen decryptors, bee talkers, trip walk. Bombing bikers, gangbangers, free the mad bomber, collapsing two towers, the end of the Western world, an empire in decline, and I feel fine. You have to speak.
So that was
okay.
I was just in. I was listening.
You were just in. I just sent in like that, doesn't it?
So that was after 9/11.
Yeah, that was. But yeah, well, obviously, unless I knew it was going to happen.
Because you were in New York at the time.
Yeah, but that was after I saw
it. Yeah, yeah. So do you think that has... that event has changed... I mean, it changed the face of a lot of, like, the political arena and the way we think about the world, but also, do you think it's changed, like, how writers respond?
I think what people are seeing is a lot of the things they've all read about and talked about, and the activists here have claimed that they were up against, but now that it's in their face, they're not prepared for the reality of it, which is people are being assaulted, artists, and especially, see, what people don't quite understand, they're less interested in activists, because you can have a group of six people or 20 constantly yelling, but what they don't want is the media. And so the first thing that you do is media. You go after radio, artists, writers, all of these people that have this voice, and you silence them. And so the people that are most in danger are going to be these artists. So what we're seeing are musicians who have outside of the drawing the party line, and actually towing the party line, and writers who unfortunately have already had already noted as being subversive. Being completely attacked, demoralized, assaulted, censored, blacklisted, and driven insane, which has always happened. But seems like all we do is go to the past. Okay, we can always mourn all the people that were dead and then say this is terrible what happened to them, and then, you know, wear a t-shirt, but we always fail to stop it while it's happening, and that's tragic, and it's happening now. But people don't want to, it's too much of a horror now to see. So yes, we have changed. I mean, things have changed. I shouldn't say it's changed. I think the reality is now people aren't hiding anymore. The people that were hiding were all the people, were these evil types, you know, these government, the spying, the phone taps, the oppression. They don't have to anymore. They pretty much won the day in that sense. Or they let you think they've won the day. Right, but the thing is to not be fooled, because they are going to be attacking, as they are now, out in public. I mean, take Bush, I mean, right there at home securities. Hi, we have the right to do anything we want to you. Yes, we will tap your phones. Canada, we will tap your phones. We are going to form an inset, which is our little secret spies with the American secret spies, and we can come in and raid your houses, confiscate your computers, we can monitor you. We can have prejudicial treatment and profiling on people. And it's right there in the news, and people are acting like this is not really happening. Of course it's happening. The police state, it is happening. But it's like we're deluding ourselves. You know, let's go watch another hockey game or something like that. Let's get drunk. You know, and that's pretty sad, because X-Files are not. I mean, this is what's going on, and I don't understand, because the government doesn't even deny it's going on. They've now they have a reason. They say because there's a terrorist around every corner. But the seems the people, they haven't caught very many terrorists. They seem to be terrorizing their own people, and it's called state terrorism, where it's the actual state itself victimizing its own people. And the only way you can possibly fit in and supposedly not get terrorized is just to keep your mouth shut, toe the party line, and close your eyes, and just let people get carted away and pushed around. And it's either that, or else stand together, and it's time to change things.
So you think it's going to make it harder for, say, writers that are politically engaged?
Well, it's already hard for them. You're saying it's hard to find venues. It's going to be hard for a lot. I mean, take the music scene. There's certain people that cannot perform. There's certain people who are major label people who are having problems. They're just told not to play. Fred Reck, Fred Reck's the DJ, and he works with Snoop Dogg, the whole West Coast crowd. He's Palestinian American. And supposedly these terrible gangster rappers are destroying hip-hop. Well, a lot of the hip-hop artists actually ran to clutch their contracts and said nothing and just decided to reduce the whole skill to yelling insults and intimidation and talking about themselves. And what the gangster rappers decided to do on the West Coast was they got very political. And they said, let's just take politics and make it gangster. So the Fred Reck just released a tune with a lot of the top cocaine, the whole gang, right? And it's available on MP3 on Fred Reck's site. And it's pretty harsh. I mean, it's pretty like, you know, Bush, watch your back. They're talking to basically what people have done by threatening other people, threatening their own peers through hip hop, threatening, walking around with this bravado, aiming their frustrations at society on each other. These gangster rappers decided to take this and use that anger they have and focus it this time properly on the right people. So they've taken it and focused it on the government. So all this, like, you know, bitch, nigger, blah, blah, I'll attack you, I'll kick your ass stuff, which people are always so brave to say about each other. Well, this time they said the same thing, but they're saying this to Bush. And this is quite interesting. And people are refusing to play it. I mean, they'll play 50 Cent talking about a pimp and a hoe and this and that, and cap a faggot, but they find it too shocking to play Fred Reck, who's actually has this gangster rap with all these gangster rappers.
Or Paris or...
You know, it's going on about, you know, no, Bush is the enemy, guys. Bush is the enemy. You know, so, and Colin Powell, his little monkey, and Tony Blair, right? And much as Canada has decided to stand apart, still, they did have a concession of allowing this state terrorism to leak in from the United States and come to this country, and especially focus on this island, because we're considered a gateway. Right, so they're just really pushing a lot of people around and raiding people's houses, and a lot of people don't know this, that they are raiding people's houses here, and they are pushing people around on this island, you know, and they're finding any excuse to do so, you know, semi-legitimate reasons to complete trumped up ones, but it's sad, and people are just allowing it to happen as they just get more alcohol. I mean, don't you find it kind of strange that everyone was blunted out and there's all this pot, and then as soon as Bush comes in, crack comes all over the place.
I just thought it was a coincidence.
What a coincidence.
Yeah, well, I guess people need something to numb the pain. But.
It's there to numb, all right, but crack was something that was constructed to destroy lower-income neighborhoods. It was meant to be filed in, to be made completely available, and it is swift, and it destroys the mind and the nervous system. And unlike any other drug, once you even quit it, whatever damage is done is done. You know, and it also, what it does is it distorts your whole perception permanently. And it makes you in such a way that basically you are running for it, so people can now control you in any way they can. Do you want more of this? Well, this is what you will do. Tell me who's doing this, who's doing what, etc. And it makes you extremely careless. So what people are doing is they're destroying your old neighborhood. So you don't have to go in anymore. They just throw the drug in, and the neighborhood falls apart within a few months. And if the people don't, you know, start to, like, you know, do their own, like, I'm not going to say policing, it's a terrible word, you know, just defending. You know, is LKJ always doing his defending? Yeah, I like that. You know, that's the defending. who you are, and not going after the victims of this, which are supposedly these horrible junkies and crackheads, but drawing attention to the fact is how is this happening, and trying to talk to these people and making sure that that things are like kids can play in parks, you know, and rigs aren't dropped around, and you know, and looking out for each other, you know, and making sure that people aren't just left in loneliness and despair, you know, listening to what people say. See, that's the thing, what they want to do. They want to make you look as a terrorist and paranoia and fear and separate all us so we don't talk to each other and so afraid to not be incriminated in something, guilt by association. But you can always destroy that. You know, just who cares? I mean, basically what? You're always going to be guilt by association because, you know, but so the thing is to, like, you have to start talking to each other, because once you realize this and you start to talk to each other, you share the same knowledge, and when you share the same knowledge, you start to realize there's a common thread here, and then you realize who the real enemy is. That you're, if you don't talk, then everyone just remains in fear, making assumptions about each other. And that was done during the McCarthy era, where everyone thought that everyone was a communist. Or maybe they didn't think they were a communist, but they're also afraid to be labeled a communist. They didn't talk to each other. And that's why McCarthy decided to go in. But then a few people stood up, even in the media. Walter Cronkite was one, and just said, this is enough's enough. This is ridiculous. You know, the artists, that's McCarthy era, that's what they went after, the artists. They went after Richard Wright. They went after Zero Mostel. They went after, they destroyed so many artists. That's why people were upset when they gave Eli Kazan an Oscar. Because there were so many artists, brave people, who refused to give names, and careers were destroyed. So many writers. Dashiell Hammett, the man, you know, the man had massive lung problems and they were throwing him in jail because he refused to give names. Lillian Hellman tells him to go piss off. You know, Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall put their money together to always to put a, because they had exhausted the Communist Party fund. Right, what the Communist Party Fund was doing was taking bail and getting these people out of jail, and for not wanting to divulge names. So Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall took their money and they were using it to get people out. But Humphrey Bogart was so connected, they just could, because he's from a wealthy family. As much as he always played these mugs, he's from a wealthy family, so they couldn't really go after him. And he used that. See, that's using your power. And he used his power in that way, transformed this greed machine to something that was going to liberate people, you know. And then you have Richard Wright, who basically had to leave the country, but then they still managed, because he kept talking and he kept on from a distance in a safe space with his family in Paris, kept trying to talk about what's going on and expose what was happening in his country to the world. And his voice was getting so loud, they cut his royalties and they took his money away, and by the end of it he was living in a one-room flat, and then they killed him.
So you could see that happening with, you know, if you just change the word from communist to terrorist.
We just changed it. Well, know? It went through several stages, didn't it? It was communist, so we call that the witch hunt, which comes back to the Salem witch hunts, which we, Arthur Miller, who was also accused of being a communist, took a risk and decided to parallel this, and he made a play called The Crucible concerning this. And then they made a really interesting movie, We Own a Rider, where it's based on a play. Actually, it's pretty much the play right to the end, and it's a very good production, right? And then they the second wave was when Reagan, who was all part of this nasty thing, Reagan was completely into divulging names. It was right there with McCarthy and everybody, right? When he finally becomes president, he decides to use the same tactic, but his was drugs. There was a drug dealer everywhere. Everybody's a drug dealer. Are you a drug dealer? You know, everybody's a drug dealer. So everyone was afraid of that. And that started to divide people. Meanwhile, there they are filing crack in everyone's neighborhoods, right? And then, look, poor neighborhoods, they're supposed to be so policed, these poor neighborhoods, but somehow they can't get a job. But how in the world, if they're this police, why are they, how come there's so much drugs they can manage to flip, to get into these neighborhoods, undetected? And where in the world are they getting urban assault weapons, where they're focusing it only on each other? Now somebody's putting it in there. Somebody is putting it in there and making and then gating it out so they all annihilate each other. Just it's a class, racial, and ethnic cleansing. And then when that's done, then what you do is you lower the property values, clean all the corpses out, and then put up a condo, which is what's happening on Vancouver Island. And then in when that was done, because you had this little brief period with Clinton, okay, so people recovering from everyone's a drug addict, to and then you see this prosperity coming in, you know, which actually was another bad thing, because what they did was they took African Americans and tossed them a lot of money, told them to shut up, and basically they took this beautiful poetry and this spoken word and turned it into just a lot of money grubbing, insulting, you know, copyright on black culture, and then proceeded to colonize the world and turn it into a ghetto. Which is really sad. Not all did that, but those are the ones who are allowed to speak when we get back to censorship. Those are the ones that were allowed to speak, and those are the ones that will continue to speak because they're willing to kill their own people and destroy the minds of their own people, white and black, just to get money and to just toe the line. Now, Clinton goes and an election gets hijacked because Bush had to be president in order to implement this final stage. He had to be, right? So therefore, he's going to get it one way or the other. And that's where we talk about this new chutzpah that people have, where they're not even going to hide it. Look, we don't have time for this anymore. Bush got it. We don't care what your opinion anymore. Screw democracy. This is a corporate global system. Screw you. And we're going after that oil, and we're going to kick some ass, and we're taking over. This is the big American outreach of the empire, right? And here's Tony Blair leading England into it to get back everything that they just lost from the Arabs in the 70s. So, like, the Arabs didn't really have very much power in that sense, and to reclaim, as South Africa lost all of its natural resources, therefore, the Arab nations lost its natural resources and were being run by this colony, but they got their asses kicked. They kicked them out. You know, South Africa kicked out England. The empire was crumbling, right? And so, therefore, as Gil Scott-Heron says in his tune B Movie, which is a beautiful rap spoken word thing, goes on for 12 minutes. It's a prophecy of what Reagan's going to do. And did anyone listen? No, but he talks about this, and one of the lines that's just really important. He talks about the Arabs kicked out the British, and now they control their world, and now they put a deposit on the third world. Put a deposit on the first world, because they just came in and started buying land and educating their sons, etc., right? But one line that's really important where he says, controlling your resources controls your world. And that's important as we look at it ourselves. To control your resources controls your world. What other people want to do is control your resources. And they want to even make it look like you don't have any resources. And that's the sad thing, that people are buying into that. And with the whole fear factor, people actually think that people have a lot more power than they really do, and they don't.
So how does that translate into literature and a culture of resistance?
Well, if people are saying dumb things
just
like that...
Just let you know, we've only got 15 more minutes.
We only got 15 more minutes. If people are saying things like that and putting their necks on the line...
If you want to read some more.
Then they get silenced. And that's what we're starting to see right now, is that people are being silenced left and right over their opinions. You're starting to see certain records discontinued, certain albums not being available. You know,
but does this reflect the public's interest in politics? Because after...
I don't think politics is completely useless.
Because, like, Michael Moore's book was, like, a bestseller. I mean, after he did that speech at the Oscars as well, and then his movie was, like,
yeah, but that's
the
whole
top
point.
Movie.
Who makes the money for that? See, if he's a bestseller, you got to understand, like, when I'm talking about people like 8 Point Bliss and this kid like James McClane, you know, and all of these people, when I talked about this whole youth are saying screw this, the industry, everything like that, it's because they will allow certain radicals to get through to a point, and then you just sell it to a certain point. But then think about it: if you're standing there selling your material, and you're supposed to be so radical. Now I'm not talking the artists. You can manipulate it in a certain way by putting your work out there and using the big company, but you can't in a way, because it backfires, as Public Enemy learned. Right? You can go out there, but still, so you get all these radicals with their Che Guevara t-shirts, and they're buying all these radical records off the shelf, as sent to you from Geffen and Warner and everybody. But,
right,
remember
right,
you talked about
machine.
My book and how much money I make? And I talked, That's the point. I mean, what? The artist would get, what, 50 cents? $2? $1? And they get the rest.
Yeah, but is it like they can say, oh, well, let them have their independent presses, let them have their
A lot of independent presses aren't like, really independent. They won't let you have an independent press. A lot of press... Okay, it's completely ridiculous that in Canada it is so difficult to print a book, considering papers are natural resource. It's not that it's difficult, and it's not that it's that expensive. It's the fact that this is printed media. If we make this real, this resource, that available for people, yeah, you're going to have a lot of people reading, God no. And reading radical things.
I'm thinking about, you know, Chumbawamba, that it's like an old narco-punk band.
They're crass, aren't they?
Well, they were...
No. It's crass.
They were kind of like crass, but they decided that they were going to go mainstream, right? So they were going to...
However, live, they're entirely
try and
different.
Subvert popular culture.
And
say,
they
okay,
realized it didn't work.
I don't know whether it did work or not.
It didn't work. It didn't work. They did one little thing, and they managed to do a little, and they did attack. They went in and went there. They did their attack, right? And it was their live show. You have to go and see. And then their anti-fascist statements and songs that they would just sing a cappella to the audience and then break into the little hit and walk off the stage. That was brilliant, right? And then notice they didn't do it again because they realized. And what I was trying to say about that is what I believe it was either Bell Hooks or Audre Lorde who said, you can't use master's tools to take down his house. And the idea of, and that was the hip-hop approach, is we're going to go in and we're going to take capitalism and we're going to take the money and we're going to run businesses and we're going to take control of this. And that's no, because we saw what happened, because the money still goes to the same Western power-mongering global market, and that's not how it works. The whole point is to try and use any means to reclaim your resources, your territory, and your life.
And then popular culture is a territory that needs to be reclaimed as well, right?
And popular culture doesn't necessarily mean you have to get on the radio.
Your smash hits are interviewing Chumbawamba and they're talking about like class war
But I already brought that up.
The Spice Girls aren't going to be talking about.
But remember, Chumbawamba, what they did was, they're very clever, they went in for that reason. They were not going in for money.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the point. I'm talking about how people want to subvert. Why, we're going to get the money, and then we're going to run this, and then we're going to have her, and we're going to put out our cool alternative radical. No. Chumbawamba, they didn't care about the money. They went to do this little pop tune in order to subvert. These are anarchists, and that's what an anarchist does do. An anarchist can do it pretty well, right? Because that's part of anarchy. They went in, they disguised themselves, they did it, and they subverted. Smash hits. Top of the pops. Ridiculous little pop festivals, and then they'd come up singing songs about anti-fascism, and they'd make sure there was no music to it. They wanted to say, listen carefully to my words. That's what they wanted to do, and that was very interesting, right? And then they left. You go in, strike, and leave, and that's, oops, did I make a 9/11? No, sorry. Okay, the thing is, they wanted to do this, and that's what they did, and it was brilliant. But remember, they didn't carry it on, going, because that's what they're going to try and tempt you like this, but it's going to die after that. And they make sure to go in and come out.
So yeah. The guys from the next show went in, so...
Yeah. So, that's it for today.
Are you going to read some more?
Do you want me to read... hold on. Yeah, I think I can get... I might be able to... Here's one.
Go and let them in while you're reading.
All right, okay, I'll give you one more. This one here is something for the lives we've lost on the West Coast. A lot of people don't really know about, and the murders. And this is actually totally a story about a Native kid that was strangled on camera on the east end of Vancouver by certain authority figures, and it's also about certain women that, because of their class and their native status, somehow people seem to have not noticed them gone missing or did any investigation. So here we go. Okay, ripped from the vault, they ciphered for the Hipocalypse Now. This is for the crackless of wasted youth. This is for the disabled hunting for condos from cardboard boxes. This is for the payback for hemp-wrapped bodies floating in the ocean, water-holding little girls cut to shreds with oxes. This is for Ian Hunter, the victim of wicked collusion. Native boys get strangled, proper mix-up, let go of cuss-cuss, in the tango with beat cops, pretty view east of Vancouver, far from Eden, caught on camera, a message to deliver. Pages go off, sounding an alarm, we're coming to do you harm, at airports terminating the system of down-pressing, news captured in sculptures of Dawson, escaping to foreign lands, developed cells, another brother fail, tricks with handcuffs and gunshots, my compadre in the agony of Griffiths, cap of metal steel in the knot meat, memories in Anthony with our defeat, our elder stripped bare on a beach, where is this road that leads to Dallas, tell us, filmic feet loaded to speak, buried in sleep, 50 to 60, all the Berry girls lined up on pretty, compilating just one day of peace.
Okay, thanks Lawrence for coming in, and the reading is the 22nd of May, Thursday, 7:30, Dark Horse Books, 6:23.
Well, actually it's called 7:30 Prophecy with Lawrence Hitchcock Braithwaite, and it's at Dark Horse Books on the 22nd at 8 p.m., and yeah, I'll be reading there, or it starts at 8, but you can get there at 7:30, and I hope that the boy dancers will be there. I've been practicing the choreography, and we got a good live show, and okay, so I don't, but I'll do it next time.
Is it going to be cheese, wine, and crackers?